shut your face. We speak the truth here. We only like to talk about the truth. Real life, nitty gritty shit. Okay. We don't like lies. We don't like liars. We like the real deal. And we also talk to some really cool people. So thanks for listening. Check us out on our Patreon and hit that follow button.
Okay, we are recording now.
All right. Awesome.
That's the great thing about being able to edit this.
Perfect.
All right, let's go ahead and jump into it. You, my friend, your name is Maggie, and you run your own artist gallery, pretty much. You do your own everything.
Yes.
When did you
Not like a gallery, but, yeah, I have my own little private space where I work from, and I make art here, and, but one day I'll have, like, a gallery and a for real studio and all those things, but, yeah.
Yeah, well, your stuff is absolutely amazing. Like, it's breathtaking. What do you got behind you now?
This is the commission that I recently finished, and I love it. And so, I don't know if you can see it.
Yeah.
There we go. But that's the one, when you contacted me first, I think you responded from this video. Yeah,
they're all good, so I believe you, whichever one it was. Like, they're all good. I just be liking it on TikTok. Yeah, I know. Like, I'm really glad you decided to talk to this random person on TikTok. It seems to where I find, like, so many creative people is on TikTok. So now your style is very kind of specific. Like, you can look at what you do and just, I know that I can kind of see, like, okay, I know who did that and who doesn't do that.
That's awesome to hear.
Yeah,
because we strive for that as artists, is having your distinct style, and that's what sets you apart. So that's really nice that you said that, so I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So did this style just come, like, naturally to you, or did you kind of work on it, or did you just, how did that come about?
So I worked on it. When I started painting again, this was about 4 years ago, I figured out my style through trial and error, and I knew I wanted to paint with color, but to be honest, a lot of people are painting with color nowadays, and it, you know, it does well, but I'm like, how do I make it even more different from that? And so I worked on quite a few paintings, and I always loved how it looked, like, right in the middle of finishing it, and then I would keep going and keep going and keep going to the point where I'm covering up that beautiful halfway point. And so I'm like, okay, I need to figure out a way I can keep that without going too far. So that's how my style developed, and I really want you to see the first layer that I did, the second layer, the third layer. 1 year I did make a glass painting, and it had three layers, and I broke down, like, my style process. First, it's, like, black and gray, no white, and then the next layer was, like, a wash of color, so you could still see the black, but then there's, like, no detail yet. And then the last layer was, like, the really tiny details with the dots and the lines and all those things. And I want you to see everything that I've put into it.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
No, I mean, like, I'm mind blown right now. Because, I mean, your average person would, like, okay, your average person would think, okay, well, she just did it all at once. Like, you just started doing it all at once. But that's really interesting to kind of hear that you do it in layers like that.
Yes.
Because do you use watercolor or oil, or what do you use?
I use acrylic paint.
Okay.
And so I use it like watercolor, where I will, it's obviously not like watercolor at all, but I will wash down the acrylic paints to give you that watery, clear kind of look. So yeah, I'm very, acrylic is a very flexible medium. And then I can also add some really textured spots to my paintings. And yeah, I love acrylic. And it doesn't take as long to dry as oil painting would, so.
Now, did that take you a while to figure that out, that you liked acrylic? Did you just started trying stuff? Like, when did you realize that you were talented? And at that point, when did you realize you were talented? And then when did you kind of say, okay, well, I definitely want to be an artist. I want to do this. Mm-hmm. Then you mm-hmm. kind of, did you have to, like, go through steps of figuring out kind of where you are now? Like, you didn't just wake up and decide to do this. You know, you had to figure out what techniques you liked, what you... How long do you think that kind of process took?
I guess if you want to start when I was, ever since I was little, I would draw a lot. And I was thankful for my parents. They really encouraged me to continue to do it. And then when I got to high school, I think that's probably when I noticed that my pictures kind of turned out better than some of the kids in the class, and and I would get a lot of compliments. And then my art teacher really pushed me to try different things, and her name is Mrs. Rollerson, so aww, shout out to her. But we did work on some painting projects, and I remember working with acrylic paint, and I think she wanted us to do that just because of how much easier it was to work with. But at the time in high school and all throughout growing up and making art, I really didn't like it, and I really liked pencil drawings. So that's what I did, and I was pretty detailed on what I could do. And I was probably too much of a perfectionist and really wanted it to look like a horse or look like a human, you know, whatever I was working on. And so I would say that's when it started, when I kind of realized, okay, I am skilled at art, but I have no idea what my avenue is. And what my mindset at the time is like, okay, yeah, I like pencil work, but everyone does it. Yeah. How can I be that much different? And I was probably more passionate about working with horses than drawing them. So I had an itch to learn that, and I was better at art, so I was not as good as working with horses, so I wanted to get better at what I wasn't good at.
That was one of my questions. Why the horse? Like, did you grow up around horses and so it was just an automatic thing, or did you not grow up around them and you just fell in love with horses?
I did not grow up around horses, and I grew up in the inner city of New Orleans, so very poor neighborhood. And so slowly I got introduced to horses. Of course it was through movies, like Spirit probably was one of my favorite movies.
Aww. That makes me cry. Let's talk about Spirit.
So that's probably where it started. And then I did get a couple of lessons growing up. And when I say a couple, I mean like a couple over a summer. And then, when my family and I would go on vacation, we would like at least do like a trail ride. So I got to experience them in that way, and I just always wanted more and craved more of them. So,
and you just chose horses, because all of your pieces, pretty much all your pieces are equine related, right?
Correct. Yes.
If you look at them, you would think you've been looking at them your whole life.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you. Yeah, I've been passionate about them my whole life, I must say that. And when I, my family and I moved to Florida from New Orleans, and as I got older, a friend of mine connected me. She knew how passionate I was about training horses. Her name is Denise, and she brought me to a therapeutic like riding program where I could volunteer, and then I in turn would get to ride. So that's how I got started with working with horses, and then I just wanted more and more. And then so through that I got connections to work for other people, and then I watched I don't know if you've heard of this documentary. It's called Wild Horse, Wild Ride. Mm-mm. And it's
I'm gonna look it up this weekend, though.
Oh, yeah, you'll love it. It's funny. It's very fun. It's heartwarming and it's funny. But they followed six trainers through an extreme Mustang makeover. And that's how I got, passionate. I want to train a Mustang. Of course, I wanted to train horses, and I was looking to train all horses. But I'm like, how cool would it be to train a Mustang? And so I contacted a few of the trainers, and the woman who actually won that year, Wylene Wilson, I reached out to her. She got back to me pretty quickly and said, if you want to come to my ranch and work with me for a few weeks, you're more than welcome. And so she just opened arms, and then so that kind of started my journey, training horses and being interested in training horses.
They say that Mustangs are kind of a completely different ball game than regular, I hate to say regular horses, but what most people are used to as far as domesticated horses versus wild Mustangs, it's not an easy walk in the park.
No, yeah. But once you get them to a certain point, they'll give you a lot more than a domesticated horse would.
That's cool.
And there's some that you can't get through to. I know some really good horse trainers, and they've done really amazing jobs with these horses. But there's some that are still a little waspy and wiry, and they're just not really safe to work with.
Yeah.
Because they've probably been in the wild for too long, and they just need to be there. But when you get the younger ones, you can kind of get to them a little bit faster. So, and mine was very young, so he was very, very trainable and good to work with.
So you did get to go out there and do it?
The Mustang makeover?
Yeah.
Yes, so I did.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I did it with my horse. His name is Trip, and I did the youth competition, and I was 17, 18 at the time, so I did the youth competition.
Yeah.
So that was really cool, and we just had to do groundwork, which was a great start for me. I think I probably would have not survived if I trained a Mustang from the very start and had to ride.
I wouldn't. For sure.
But it was fun. It was a good.
Now I wanted to dabble into something we talked about on our preface call, your sister.
Okay.
So
yes.
Your sister has been a big impact in your art and everything. Do you want to kind of talk a little bit about how that happened?
Yeah, absolutely. So after I did the Mustang makeover, while I was there with the help of Wylene, I got the opportunity to work for some different people in Texas. So I moved from Florida to Texas within 2 weeks after the competition. And so ever since then, I would say it was about maybe 5 to 7 years I was there training and working for different horse trainers, and that's what I was really passionate about. And then my sister passed away in December 2019, and that really changed the game for me. And at first I was in shock, and I didn't give myself really time to process it, but I think it was a gift in a way, because I wasn't ready to process it. And so I went back to work. I spent 10 days in Florida visiting with my family and doing the funeral and everything. And then I get back to work, and I already feel different. I feel like a different person, but I'm just, continuing to push through. And my employers at the time were very gracious and knew kind of what I was going through. But I just kept pushing through. until the end of the year, the next year of, I guess, 2020, her first year anniversary came up. And apparently, like, when you're grieving and stuff, like, that's a very big deal because it's like it happens all over again.
Yeah.
And that's what it felt like for me.
And so, this was sudden. Like, this loss was a very sudden loss. Like, it was completely out of the blue, which people try to say one's worse than the other. I don't know. I think they're both bad. Whether you know it's coming versus whether you don't know it's coming, that's very traumatic. Very traumatic.
Yes. Yes, I agree. And, when it's sudden, you're not expecting it at all. And then it's like, what do you even do? So versus someone who's like maybe in the hospital and already dying, like you get to worry a lot. You get to, like, you know, do all of that. But I agree with you. I don't think one is worse than the other. I think there's pros and cons to both. Right. I mean, there's no pros. There's probably just cons. But
I know what you mean. I know what you mean. Because it's like when nobody wants to go through something sudden, because then you don't have the time to do the things. It's human nature to think you have time. Everybody does that. And sometimes we don't. You don't realize it. Versus where if you know somebody, you know, my brother passed away. We all knew that he was going to pass away. Like, we knew.
Wow.
He was born with a disease that he was going to die from. So, and the pro of that, I guess, the pro of that is that, you know, we had time to do those, to treat him differently versus if you didn't know. You know, that's a lot. That's probably a roller coaster of emotions to come after something traumatic that you don't know is going to happen versus whether you know, you know. So I get what you're saying. It is. It's pros and cons to both situations, even though they both suck.
Yes, they both suck. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
But she was very influential in this first year anniversary for you, right?
What's the question again?
It was very, like, her death and the 1 year anniversary was very influential as far as your art is concerned, right?
Correct. What's the word? Process. I had to process that, and I couldn't ignore it any longer. And it was a beautiful time where I had some money saved up, so I was able to take a couple months off of work. And I was continuing to work, but in a different way, in a much slower pace than I was when I was training horses. And I wrote a lot of poetry, just wrote out how I felt. And I also started to make art. And most of the paintings that I first started to make was grief paintings and paintings that represent how I felt. And
the one that you just posted on your TikTok with the girl, that's probably my favorite of all yours. The girl that's on the floor and the horse is like nudging her head. That's kind of a grief one, isn't it?
Yes.
I love that one.
And that's the one I painted later on. So I started with some other pieces that represented like me going through grief, but not the first initial phone call where everything changes, right? Your whole life changes. So that's a really special one, and a lot of people have resonated with it. And I remember at the time when I was creating it, I'm like, people may not like this. Like, this is one's for me, and it became one for everyone. And it was really cool to be accepted on a grieving painting, because I thought that people wouldn't want to see it, but they felt understood and seen, which was really cool.
Oh yeah, yeah. It'll bring me to tears just thinking about it. It's very touching. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very touching when you see it. I think people that probably don't have horses could resonate with that painting. Just the fact of animals and the impact that having any type of pet in your life can help someone. I mean, we got emotional support animals out here. Give me a break, you know?
Oh, for real. And to deny that they do that would be a very disservice to them. So, yeah, they definitely do that for us in many of ways. So,
now, which one's your favorite of all the ones you've done? Which one's your favorite?
Great question.
Is that a hard question?
It is a hard question, because after I'll finish one, I'll be like, oh, this is my new favorite. But I will say holding space gets a lot of credit. It has, it's made me the most out of any commission has made me. I guess I would give credit to holding space. And I mean, I love some of the other ones that haven't got a lot of attention on them, but I guess I would have to thank that one for being so special.
And that's the one with the girl and the horse that I'm talking about, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought. Because you name all of them, right?
I do, yes. Okay,
that's what's the name of the one behind you?
Oh, I don't name the commission. Sorry, I lied about that. But no, I don't name this one. I don't name the commission paintings. I kind of let the owner, and some I will. So sometimes I'll get asked to make basically an original idea. Someone will give me their story, their background, and things and symbols that are important to them, and then I'm able to put it all into one and translate that for them in a painting. So one that I did, I don't know if you've seen it, but it's called Inner Work, and it's two bison. One's very calm, one's kind of fighting the other, and then there's like a Native American inside the calm bison, and then he's got his hand reached through, and he's like stopping the bison that's fighting. And so that one was a really cool one. And I love to make stuff like that, where it's basically an original painting where I'm kind of like, I'm creating the images, I'm putting it to life and everything. And then on top of that, I guess I get to title it as well. So,
God, that's so cool. Now, what's one of maybe the things that you hope people will take away from an experience with you, whether it's a commission piece or they buy a print or something of that nature? What is kind of your objective to give back to people when you do this?
That's really cool. I really love that question, because there's probably a lot of things. Probably the first thing is for them to feel seen and understood if they buy one of my grief paintings. And then if they get a commission, I just want them to be like, wow, and so proud of the painting that they just bought. Like, no one else can do it like this. It's really special to me, and I really want them to feel it and connect with it. And that's usually when I stop on a painting, is when it makes me emotional. Even the commissions will make me emotional just because of like how beautiful it is. I really want them to share that same feeling of like awe, I guess.
I think that's the whole objective. That's how you know you're good in art, when you can get an emotional reaction out of somebody. That's what I think personally. I don't know if anybody else thinks that, but that's what I think. Like, when you can look at something and it makes you feel something, no matter what that feeling is, then that's success for art.
That's very true, and I'm glad that you said that, because I will have people comment and be like, oh, this brings me to tears, or this is making me cry, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And then, but instead I'm like, yes, like,
right.
Yeah, crying is very good, very healthy for us, so it's actually a really good thing to do. So and that's probably why it's a reward, is because it is good. Like, if it was, I mean, tears were viewed as a bad thing, it would be like, okay, everybody hates my artwork.
Right.
But it's a very good thing to be able to release, and I'd love to help people be able to release through the artwork. So that's really cool.
You are right about that, because I never forget it. I had this dude say something to me. I don't know what we were talking about or what was going on or why he said it, but he said something along the lines of, if you don't talk about that, you'll have that taste in your mouth for the rest of your life. Mm. And it's like, if you don't ever grieve, or if you don't ever get mad, or if you don't ever just like get that emotion out, it'll eat inside of you in all different kinds of ways. You'll never get rid of it until you release it. So it's a good thing. Now, I also wanted to talk about, we talked about this on the preface video, but the Brandt Performance Horse piece that you did that was auctioned off to help raise money, you kind of had a special story with that as far as the 444, which, are you talking about angel numbers?
Well, it's not even that. So the story that I told you, it wasn't really an angel number thing, but I mean, maybe it is, and that's kind of hard to, I don't want to put that on that thing that happened, because it's, they may not see it that way. And, so I haven't expressed like, yes. So for the 44, those are sequence numbers, and there's like an angel message maybe behind those numbers that are repeating, and that's something I can't control or create, and that's just kind of what happened.
I'm a firm believer horses died in angel numbers. I'm a firm believer in angel numbers. I'm just letting you know that. Good. Like, I take it as a sign, so...
It is. It can be. It can be a sign. So, yeah, I'm glad we kind of resonate on that. Did you want me to share the little story?
Well, yeah, because you talked about how the fours kept kind of glitching or whatever, and then there were how many X amount of horses that passed away, et cetera, et cetera, and kind of how the whole situation transpired.
Okay. So I got asked to make a memorial painting for the 44 horses that died, and it happened June 8th. I'm so glad I remembered that. In Ohio with Brandon Brandt, and I'm forgetting the other trainer's name. Do you remember?
Eric Priest.
And so I got asked to paint that by one of their clients, one of their customers who also lost horses in the fire. And she just let me do my thing. And I was very thankful for the opportunity, but really sad about the situation. And to be honest, the reason why that painting took me as long as it did, because it would just make me cry several times because of the whole deal. Anywho, I was in the middle, speaking of that, I was in the middle of working on that painting where I felt like I was halfway through, but I was stuck on moving forward on that actual piece. And I started to work on a smaller painting just for the heck of it, just for my, I was feeling creative, but not on the current painting that I was working on. And of course, I draw a girl crying, and there's four other horses in there, and you see the three horses right away, but you don't really see the fourth. So some people will probably think there's actually three in that picture, and then there's the fourth one with its head down, and her arm is almost like across it.
It took me a minute to see the fourth one.
What'd you say?
It took me a minute to see the fourth one.
Yes.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And then that kind of helps with the story and the backstory, which is interesting. So I make this piece, and there's four horses there, and Christine, the client who I've been communicating with on the painting and the details of what happened, which is really important to how I'm gonna present this painting. And what she originally told me is that three horses made it out of the barn, survived the barn fire. And when I was closer to the end of the painting, she reached out to me again and said, "Hey, I recently found out there was actually 4 horses that survived the barn fire." She's like, "I hope that doesn't mess you up in your process." And I was like, "I actually haven't painted the 4 horses that survived yet, so that's perfect." And that little original piece was called Takes a Village, and I posted them separately. And then after I posted the original piece, and I just kind of came to the realization, like, these paintings are connected. I used the similar colors too, which I didn't have to do, I just did. And then I was like, I want to make a post about how these 2 paintings are connected. And I said, like, I don't believe anything is random. And so I just kind of talked about that, the relationship between those 2 paintings. And then after I posted it, I think I got a comment. So I went to go check, and because I like to reply to the comments usually. And then there was like 3 likes, 2 likes plus 1 or 3 likes plus, and yeah, it was 2 likes plus 1. And my phone was glitching and it was flashing 44, 44, 44, 44. So like the whole phone was kind of glitching, and then on the likes it was 44, 44. I'm like, I don't have 44 likes yet. It's only been a couple minutes. And then at the top, I checked it 4 minutes later. So there was a whole lot of 4s going on, and I'm like, I was like, I'm screen recording this because no one's going to believe me. I actually sent that to Christine and a couple others, and I was like, there's no way. But I ended up, I was originally wanting to sell the small original Takes a Village. But I ended up giving it to Kathy and Brandon Brandt. I asked Christine, I was like, has anyone lost 4 horses in the fire? And she's actually, Brandon and Kathy have. So I was like, let me see if they want it and I'll give it to them.
Aww. I think that's really cool. I think that's freaking awesome. It obviously was a sign. Like, it was a sign. Like, I believe in those signs like that. If you would have told me without the screen recording, I would have believed you. So, like,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I know. I had to show you because I did not know how you stood on those things. I'm like, she's not going to believe me.
I think it's awesome. And it's obviously, it's great what you did for them. I mean, that whole thing is very tragic because I remember it. I kind of told you how I learned about it. And it's still, if I think about it on the wrong day, it'll make me want to cry because it's just so, it's such a tragedy. Like, it's, you know, whoever thinks they're going to wake up and lose just one animal versus mm-hmm. that many animals. And then, you know, to try to keep going and that's your livelihood. And that's just, I mean, you know, it's crazy. But thank God. The horse community, I mean, everybody from reiners to rodeo to all kinds of people come around to help. So
yes,
that was it was a good thing. So I'm glad you did that. I think it's great. And that painting is gorgeous. You showed me that.
Thank you. Yeah. I agree with you. That's probably one of the craziest things to ever happen to someone. And, but I also heard about how many people showed up
and
just stopped what they were doing to help. And that's huge. So
you could just feel it. Like, you could just feel a horse person, like, I'm starting to get emotional again now. You could just feel how they felt, and you would never want any horse person or anybody to feel that way. Like, it's just,
yeah,
sucks all around. But anyways, let's not get emotional. Let's not get emotional. So back to you, kind of how you grew up and how you ended up into horses and that kind of stuff. You did take a couple of lessons. Do you own a horse now, or do you have plans to own one and show, or have you shown, or what's your deal with that?
I do have a horse, and it's the same horse, Trip. And he's able to do, like, everything, but nothing like amazingly well. We did. So he's not specialized in reining or cutting, but he loves to work cows. He'll do a little sliding stop for me. He'll do a cute turnaround. He'll change leads. Probably what he's maybe best at is like going through a trail course and opening the gate, not being scared of this, dowling off of this, dragging this. Like, you can do almost anything with him. And so that's what I love about him. And I would say we really do like to work cows, and I've had some opportunities to show like a little bit in like a stock horse show.
Yeah.
But I would love to do that more. I'm just not to the point where I have like a horse trailer yet, and then I'm also really not in the right place where I can just pick up and go with some friends on the weekend. And that's how I would do it before. I was at better locations as far as where I boarded my horse, and some people were already going, and then I can just pay them to haul with them. So I definitely haven't been showing. I listened to your podcast with Michelle Moore, and I relate to her a lot when it comes to nerves and everything before showing. Or even before an interview, I was very nervous, but I'm happy we're doing this. But yeah, for horse shows, like, they make me nervous, but that's the horse I need to do it on his trip, because he stays cool as can be most of the time. So
it is, like, horse showing is, I don't know if me and her actually talked about it, but maybe we did off camera, but I remember talking to somebody just about how horses is generally a single person sport versus if you have softball teams, volleyball teams, cheerleading teams, you know. And so I don't want to say girls get against each other, but you are singled out more in a equine related event versus other types of sports. Now, cutting, you'll have like people that, you know, do turn back for you or whatever if you get into team roping and stuff like that, but still you feel like you're the only person out there, and you're like, you know, everybody's just watching you. And so it is a lot of stress, it's a lot of nerves. I mean, I remember showing, I have no desire to show again, but she's right, it is it can be a lot. Like, you put a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of effort into not even a minute sometimes.
Right, and you're supposed to shake it off like you just went out there and had fun, and you know, it's like, yeah, it was fun, I guess. I just always feel like you can do better, or if you miss that opportunity where like you make a mistake as a rider and the horse makes a mistake because you made the mistake in the first. And then, it's hard to brush it off and be like, oh, yeah, that was just for fun. We had fun, you know.
Just for fun, and we lost money, but it's okay.
It's okay, yeah. We're just gambling here.
Are you very empathetic? Because you're very creative-minded, and you're very artistic-minded. Are you very empathetic, too, like as far as people's feelings and reading the room?
Yes.
That affects me.
That's you too?
Yeah, so like I'll get, nervous is probably the wrong word. I get like, I can feel somebody's energy, and that will, I'll make a determination off of that. Like, if I feel somebody's energy, like, you know, like they hate me, I'd be like, okay, well, I don't need to go over there, or I need to stay away from this person, or I need to like, you know, I can relate as far as that's concerned when it comes to competitive sports, because, you know, at the end of the day, you are there to compete. It's hard. It's so hard to keep that mindset. There was actually an article where this woman talked about how you have to be friends with your competitors in the horse industry. And it's so hard because you have to be friends literally with the girl that you're trying to beat.
Yes.
And it's so hard to keep those like lines from blurring and to keep those energies intact and your feelings in the right area. So,
And then your values, too, on top of that, right? So this person may not be a good person, but I have to show her kindness.
Yeah. That is hard. It's very hard to do sometimes. Or to just try to understand the other perspective of it. Especially this day and age. Because, like, you'll just... Social media is a good example of it. You know, you could have something go the wrong way. And next thing you know, it's just... It's a fire, you know. As far as like what people think and people's perspectives and things of that nature, you can have some mean people out there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure.
But you are right. You have to still show them, be nice and show grace, or you could just, you know,
block them.
Block them. That's my biggest thing. You know what? If I get bad comments, I'm like, does it not ever cross people's mind that we can just delete that comment and block you?
Right. I agree. Yeah. And every time I haven't had it a lot, but I've had a couple people in the past not say a very nice thing.
Really?
Yeah. And it was probably just because, and it was one on, it was a comment on holding space. And, I think it was just too much for that person to see. And so they had to say something negative about it. And I reached out to one of my good artist friends, and she was like, just ignore it. Don't engage with them, because they'll, you can't convince them. Or you can't. Sometimes you can't even show them kindness either. Like, oh, thank you for your comment. Like, you don't want to do that. You just don't give it any attention, and they'll usually kind of leave it alone. But
I can't believe that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it was like several, like, thousands that liked it. So it's like, it's reaching a lot of people. So there's got to be a bad egg in there somewhere. And yeah, they had to comment on it, but this was a long time ago and it was just one person. So it was amazing that I got the feedback on it that I did versus the one comment. Like, it's not that big of a deal, but from like through learning and through wisdom and stuff. And, you might relate to this too, where I think it's about, goes back to the grief topic, the way she commented made it sound like you don't do that, basically. Like, you know, you clean yourself up and you don't cry about it anymore. Something like that. So I think she just wasn't in a place where she could accept the tears, accept whatever she was feeling. So it's just where she was at, I guess.
No, you're right. Some people look at tears or grief or even apologizing as a form of weakness, even though it's not necessarily a weakness. It actually can be more powerful than being negative, you know. So that's, well, I hate that somebody said something to you, but, you know, that is the world. You'll have random idiots in the world. So it's like your friend probably told you, just let that, they don't, just let it roll off your back. Because, you know, people are entitled to their opinions. Absolutely. Of course.
Mm-hmm.
I was taught where if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. So.
Yeah. 1,000%.
You know, I mean, if you like it, cool. And even, you know, there's a thin line between being blunt and real and honest with somebody to help them versus just cutting them down, you know. So
right now.
What I know, when we first started off, you don't necessarily have a gallery yet, but obviously that's a goal of yours. You want to have a gallery and you want to move to that. How far do you see that happening, and what's kind of your short-term and long-term goals that you have for your business?
I would say that's probably between like 5 maybe to 10 years. I'm not in a hurry to do that, because you do have to manage that gallery. You have to make sure someone is there. And I do like to travel, and I would love for my art to go globally, where I'm doing shows in a different country. And so I would So when I'm ready to do that, I will have to have a team, people helping me. Right now, it's just me. So, yeah, I would want to be ready for that. And then as far as goals go, it's... Okay, so something that's like a short-term goal is I want to create more commissions that are, like we talked about earlier, where they're giving me a story and I can create something beyond they can imagine. And also I would like to be more successful on original artwork that I create. So I want to continue that, and that way I can be like maybe more selective on the commissions that I take, because my original paintings are carrying me, and same thing with the prints and stuff. And then we also talked about some other ideas of maybe putting my artwork on different merchandise and different things, expanding how I can present my art. So yeah, probably being more creative in that sense. Those are probably like the short-term goals. And then long-term goals is just supporting whatever I want to do. The original paintings is probably like my passion. I love making people feel something, like we talked about how I want them to receive something.
So now, the originals are the ones that you just wake up one day and you're like, this is what I want to paint, versus somebody that, let's say I contact you and I go, I have this horse in this situation, I want to commission you to make me something, and then I tell you kind of what's in my head. So that's the difference between your originals versus somebody that has a story, right? The commissions.
Correct. Yeah. And for the commissions, I'll do like two styles of commissions. The first one is you send me a picture and we just go off of this picture, and then you tell me the colors you want. And sometimes the customers let me choose the colors, but I like a happy medium so they know where I'm going. And if they don't like a particular color, I don't add it. So, and I do really enjoy those commissions, don't get me wrong. But I would also like to create more originals where people are like, what's the next series is she going to create? What's the next painting she's going to create? But I'd still always love to do the commissions. And then the second style of commission would be one where they tell me a story and we kind of go into depth on that. And then, so basically I'm kind of creating like original idea as well. How can I translate this for them?
What's your favorite emotion to portray? Because you know what, you just made me think about something. It would be cool to see what you come up with if somebody, like a congratulatory piece versus a grieving piece, because the grieving is obviously you got that down pat, like you can get to people with that. But it would be cool, because happy, that's the wrong word, that's so general, but
euphoric?
Yes, something like that. That would be really cool to see what you come up with if you went that route.
Okay, that might be a sign. just because I've been debating on what original piece I want to work on next, and I'm like, do I showcase those? Should I showcase the sorrowful feelings again in a different way, or for like a different thing, or am I ready to create something really happy that makes you cry in a different way, like, oh my gosh, I love that and I want to feel like that.
That would be so freaking cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that, I guess it's time for me to do that, but that is something I do want to do, is do the happier things and people can feel
or fear. What about fear, as far as like,
oh, yeah,
not necessarily fear as in loss, but fear as in like not making the cut, or fear like as in, you know, like we were talking about yeah. same thing with Michelle and same thing with you in the interview, like, and being nervous and being like having to do something even though you're very passionate about it, because that's like a huge back and forth, like, I gotta keep going, no stop. Like, I literally just saw this girl post this thing on Facebook in a group, and she was so sweet about it, because she was like, she was basically pouring her heart out about this horse she's got and how mm-hmm. she's put everything into her and they're just not getting anywhere. Mm-hmm. And I can relate to that, because, you know, selling feels like you're quitting, you yeah. know, versus actually kind of stepping back and going, okay, do I fear that I'm quitting mm. or am I not giving myself an opportunity to do something new and different? So a lot of people were commenting on it. It was like hundreds of comments, because everybody was telling her, like, sell the horse. If you're not meshing, sell the horse. Get you something else. It's okay. It's not that big of a deal. It would be cool to see if you could tap into that type of emotion, like feeling like you're not there. Like you're not, because riding horses is a hard sport. It's a very yeah. hard sport. So
this really... You talking about this, I'm like, I was trying not to interrupt, because I was like, yes, like, and okay, this is what I like to do. I like to, so you just kind of finished the other half of the painting. So one, the painting that you want to see and where you feel so good and euphoric, yeah, I want to be her, like, she's amazing, she's making me feel something good. And then you have the girl who's very fearful and afraid of failing. And that's huge. And that's something I feel a lot. So it wouldn't be untrue. And I like to paint true emotions and stuff. So that would be something that's very real for me and probably real for a lot of people. So I guess I'm being called to create that for my next original painting, because I really resonate with that. And I've actually have been thinking about it the last couple weeks. I'm like, I don't know what I'm gonna do next for an original, because I have like a booklet, and I usually try to sketch up what I'm seeing in my mind, and or if it's an emotion or if it's like an image that, you know, represents an emotion, I want to paint that, and I don't want to lose it, because there's been times where I've, like, I had this really cool image in my mind and I lost it because I didn't write it down, I didn't sketch it out.
I'm not
gonna guarantee it that's gonna be the next thing I'm gonna do, but I feel like I should, so we'll see.
You just made me think about something, like, as far as your ideas and your originals that you come up with and stuff, if you're not fully passionate about it, can you see a difference when you, I hate to say this, can you see a difference in your artwork when you care versus when you don't really care about it and you're trying to make yourself care about it? Like, commissions are obviously out of the question, but I'm talking about the originals. You know, when you think of something that you want to do and you're like, you really feel this, you really want to do it, can you see the difference in your work versus something that you come up with and you're like, okay, I'm going to try it. I don't really mm-hmm. like it, but I'm going to try it. Do you see the difference, or do you feel a difference?
Yeah, both. There probably have been, like, maybe only a couple of pieces where I just wanted to try, like, a technique or something, and I just kind of free float it, and there was no meaning behind it. There was no message behind it. And so I absolutely agree. And I think that's how I felt the younger Maggie when she first started creating art. I didn't know what the purpose was for. And so I've always been, like, purpose-driven. So even with the horses, if I feel very purposeful about who I'm working for and their mission and stuff, it's like, oh, it's so fun to work for them and help them, versus working for someone or making a painting that is you're not very passionate about. And so, yeah, I definitely see a difference for sure.
When Now, what would you, you just made me think about two more questions. I'm sorry. What would you, if you could sit down with younger Maggie, what would you say to her?
I think what I would say to her is, you're going to make it no matter what.
Aw. Now, yeah. Now, if you could sit with the older Maggie, what would you want to say to her? What would you want to ask her?
So, the Maggie that I haven't seen yet, what would I say to her? I would probably just say that you're a badass and you've always...
Your stuff is bad.
I haven't met her yet, so, but I think I would just be applauding her, really. So
it takes a lot of guts to not only just work for yourself, regardless of what you do. It takes a lot of guts to run a business, but to do it off of an industry that is not very common, I guess is the right word. Like, you don't have a lot of just freestanding artists. It's not, you know, so that is badass. That, you know, you should give yourself a round of applause. I mean, that's badass to do that. So you obviously believe in yourself, and the work speaks for itself. So
yeah,
it'll sell itself. You don't really need to even do, you don't need to do anything. So
right, I love that. Yeah. Yeah,
I think it's cool. I think artwork is awesome. Like, I mean, you know, you to be able to tap into people's emotions. Probably one of the coolest things about it is that sometimes people don't know they have these emotions until they see something that brings it out of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like a piece of artwork. Like, even kind of like, I don't think me and Josie talked about it, but Josie's kind of the same thing too. I know you're friends with Josie. Like, when you see a piece, I told you about the piece that she did that I just really like, just connected with. You don't feel that emotion until sometimes you see somebody put it on a canvas for you.
Yeah,
it's probably what that person who the bad comment that you got, that's probably, she couldn't handle it. She probably really, like, you know, couldn't handle what she was feeling, because you do have a lot of people that just suppress it so good they don't know how to deal with it.
Yes, and I absolutely agree with that. And and I feel like we're taught in our society and how things kind of run is you are supposed to suppress those emotions, which is unfortunate. But then there's like this undercurrent of people who are waking up to that, and I going through the motions of their emotions and why they have childhood trauma, why is this still bothering me, you know. And so I think those people are really waking up to just kind of like the things we've been talking about, and releasing those emotions versus someone who never dealt with them and they were the same person from this year to this year because there was no growth. They never grew. They just kind of went through the motions, went to the same job and died of the same thing, you know, that was passed down in generations of families. Like, we have heart disease or we have this or that, and but it would be very beautiful to like break those cycles of disease and break those cycles of certain emotions like fear of failure or anger, or like a family that might have anger issues. So just different things like that.
That's funny that we're talking about this, because I literally had a conversation with a lady yesterday about like relationships in general. You don't hear of basic marriages and relationships lasting 30, 40, 50 years like our grandparents and some of our parents do. And I don't know if that has anything to do with like suppressing things, because you would have to suppress a lot to make something last that long, versus nowadays you have people that just openly talk about therapy, they openly talk about eating disorders, they openly talk about mental health issues. I mean, whereas even I remember growing up when I was younger, you didn't talk about that stuff. You didn't talk about problems. You didn't talk about other things that were going on. And not that it was a bad, I mean, it was viewed as a bad thing, but it was just like something that you just don't do. Nobody really told you why, but that now you just see more and more people open up about different things. And so I don't know if that has anything to do with it or not, but it probably is a generational thing too, don't you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're from that generation where you push through.
Right.
No matter how ugly it gets, and that's not fair to anyone.
Right. Like, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad, it's kind of like, it's like,
it's pros and cons, right? It's pros and cons.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because there is, I will have to say, like, in my generation of kids, there's probably like, now that I know that there's more awareness about things, but they use their, what they learned from their parents as, oh, well, I'm just not going to deal with it because I don't have to. It's my childhood trauma, or I have this issue, and they accept the issue versus like, oh, I mean, I can see it. I'm aware of that. This makes me feel a certain way, but I don't want to be defined by it. I don't want it to change who I want to be, and people just kind of accept I'm always going to be this way because, you know, this happened in my childhood, or it happened generationally, and I'm like, that's everything against I want to be in. I want to evolve to as kind as I can be, as loving as I can be, despite what I've been through, and despite what my parents have been through. So I'd love to, like, I don't know, evolve as best as I can, I guess.
That's all we can do. That's all anybody can do, you know?
Uh-huh.
I'm really glad you did this. I've learned a lot, so I'm glad you took the time to do this with me.
Me too, and it went a lot better than I expected because of how nervous I was. But I really enjoyed talking to you, Brianna, and I love your mission and what you're putting out there, so I appreciate you.
You did great. You didn't look nervous at all. You did great.